Good morning, everyone. It's nice. We still have a few people straggling in, but I do want to get started. I do realize that I am between all of you and lunch, and we'll try and be respectful of that. I am Adam Glick. I work at Microsoft. I work actually back in Redmond on the product. It's truly my honor to be here to present you to you today. Thank you for coming. I'm here to talk about Office beyond the desktop. I'll warn you, I talk fast. It's just what I'm used to on the East Coast of the United States where I grew up. I will try and talk slowly. If I'm talking too fast, just signal me. I also want to set some expectations for this session. It's a 200-level session. When I think about leveling, I think about 100 levels, kind of vision, blue sky stuff. 200 level is what your end users, what your information workers are going to be used to. 300 level I think of as configuration and architecture, and 400 level I think of as code. I will go through some of the configuration pieces. I'll go through some of the architecture and the things that you need to think about when you roll out some of what I'm going to talk about today, which is the web app server. But I'm going to spend a fair amount of time also showing you what your users are going to be able to do. I won't spend any time showing you what it was like in 2010, but I will talk to you about what the differences are for those of you who are used to what was there in 2010, and so you can see what's new in that. Kind of a quick pulse check for those that are in the room. How many of you have used the Office web apps 2010, that was part of SharePoint? Okay, so about a third of the group. So for some of you folks, you're going to see some of the differences from what you saw before. For those of you who have not used them, it'll be new and you'll see what the product offering is as a whole. With that said, we're going to get started, and these stragglers can just kind of find their seats as they come in. We welcome you all. But thank you for having me here. Start with some of the basics here. Cloud. Cloud is a really overused term. I find that everyone uses it, and a lot of folks don't actually know what it means. How many of you actually administer servers, or actually server admins? That's a good number. So my bet is that most of you are more familiar with what this means, but I want to kind of set some base level for folks. Cloud does not just mean browser. When I talk about the Office web apps and what that means in terms of being part of a cloud infrastructure, it means, of course, that you're going to be able to access it through a browser. But a browser is really just a presentation layer. It's a common protocol that we're going to use, in this case HTTP and HTTPS, and it's about a common platform, JavaScript, HTML5. But that's really just what you're looking at. It's also the back-end pieces. It's what we're doing as either part of your infrastructure or part of the Microsoft cloud infrastructure to make this available to you, and that means having your data available wherever you are. That means running the data centers. That means having multiple data centers. It means handling failover and tracking the user data and making sure that things sync up between all the different experiences that people have. So I'm going to focus on the web apps here today, but one of the things you should be aware of is with Office 2013, the new Office, Office 365, if I'm making edits and I do that in the web app, that's going to show up when I access it through the Rich app. And if I leave off, if I'm reading a document or looking at a presentation or any of the documents that you may be interacting with, if I go and I access those and I leave off at some place, some of you may have seen the part where you open it up and it tells you, hey, you left off the last time you were using this in this particular spot. That same thing is true with the web apps. And that's all done with the cloud infrastructure, whether that be a private cloud that you're maintaining on your premises or at a colo facility, or whether it be through Microsoft's cloud. And so just understanding that this is cloud-based, but when we talk about cloud, it's more than just opening up in a browser, seeing in a browser. It's about all the infrastructure that goes with that. It's about the management of that, the security that goes along with it, the saving it, the failover. So setting that context for this, when you think about rolling this out within your organizations and enterprises, that you can do it privately, you can do it as part of public cloud, but you need to think about it beyond more than just opening up in a browser. Because if you think about browser, you've been able to write HTML5 apps for years. Well, not HTML5, you could do HTML4 before, but I mean JavaScript, HTML, they're not new. It's more than just that. It's not just presentation layer. It's about the back-end data, and I'll talk later. I'm going to split this presentation into two parts. One's going to be the end user part where you see the functionality. The second part's going to be talking about the server, about how you set up the servers, about how you configure them, about what you need to do, thinking about load balancing and such. And so that second piece is really what this is meant to convey to you, is that you need to think beyond just what it means to have an app running there. It's not just what's been programmed there. It's about what you can do with it and what the server infrastructure is going to make available to you and to all of the users that you support. So another thing I want to talk about is there's a lot of web apps out there. Today, I'm going to focus on Word, PowerPoint, Excel, and OneNote. What people typically think of as kind of the core pieces of Office. Web apps go beyond that. So obviously Outlook Web App, probably the one that most people are familiar with that goes beyond that. That's part of the Exchange infrastructure. If you have some questions about that, I'm happy to answer them. I've been the product manager for that product for about 5 years. But I also work on these pieces, and it's important to understand all of these deal with the web app server, which is what I'm going to talk about infrastructure-wise today. When you think about things like the Outlook web app, that's actually part of the Exchange infrastructure, so it is slightly different, and you'll see one slide on that. There's also other ones when you think about what we do with Exchange and Access and what you do with Access data, what you do with Visio, and what you do with Project. So there's a whole set of the Office web apps that you can use. I'm going to focus on these four because it tends to be the ones that people think of as core Office experience, and they're the ones that are packaged into the Office web app server that I'm talking about and showing you today. So just to set a set of expectations, if you have questions about the others, happy to talk to you about it afterwards, but just the session won't be covering it. So I talked a little bit about kind of the beyond the cloud piece of it. So when I think about the Office web apps and the web app server, there's several different ways that people can access this. As Microsoft, we want people to have a consistent set of experiences and get the richness that they get out of those web apps, and we want them to be able to get it from anywhere. And so there's a number of different places that people are going to get access to these things. So how many people have an Outlook.com account? Quick show of hands. A few of you. For those of you that aren't aware, Hotmail has kind of migrated over to Outlook.com. It's a great experience. I may show you a little bit of that later if I have some time. But that, if you go in there or if you go into SkyDrive, you're going to see the Outlook web app, or I'm sorry, the Office web apps. And you'll get them there. You'll be able to interact with them the same way that you're used to. And same, I'll show you most of the demos that I do within an enterprise context. You're going to see them in SharePoint. But everything that I show you is just as true if you go and you're using the public consumer available ones. Those are available for free. People can do whatever they want. Now, along with that, obviously, there is a different SLA that's provided with that. And that makes sense. This is the one that we can iterate on very quickly. When you think about a consumer-provided service, people can go, we move very quickly on what we do there. There's a service cadence about every couple of weeks. We push updates up to that one. So it moves very quickly. And the trade-off for that is obviously at consumer level, there's a different SLA that you're going to get than if you're enterprise level. For on-premises, if you're actually installing an Office web app server in your environment, then think of that as your private cloud, whether it's on-premises or at a colo facility, and that's kind of the other end of the spectrum of that one. We don't want to be patching it every 2 weeks, sending you updates to it, and you probably don't want to be deploying updates every 2 weeks. You don't want to be testing them in your sandboxes, and so you're going to see changes in that one really come with things like service packs or major releases. So it's going to move slower. There's going to be a higher level of confidence that you have with that, along with a higher level of support and SLA that you get from Microsoft and what you can do within your organizations with that. Those are the two ends of the spectrum. In the middle of that spectrum is Office 365. So Office 365 is obviously, it's hosted in the cloud. And that one will be patched on a 90-day, so quarterly basis. And so, again, the same set of functionalities, but since we're managing that, or here in Australia, we actually have a partner that manages that it will get updates, it'll get them on a 90-day cadence, but there's a higher quality bar to what has to be there. So when you think about it, if you want to kind of tinker on the bleeding edge, you can play with the consumer one. And see what's going on there. That's the one, like I said, it's at Outlook.com. You'll also see it, the integration, if you've seen our integration with Facebook through Docs.com, that's what that shows up there, that you can get that. That's kind of bleeding edge. If you want to kind of stay on what's enterprise cadence, you can be with Office 365, and that'll get quarterly updates. And then if you're managing this on-premises, you're going to have service packs that come out, and with the service packs and full updates to the server that come out, that's where you'll see the updates that happen there. If you're in a federated environment, so you've got people in Office 365 and some people on-premises, then you can choose how you architect your internal server domain to make sure where you're sending people and which versions of those experiences they're getting. That's up to you as to how you want to architect your internal environment. So when we think about the design tense, what is it that we want to do when we're building the Office web apps? So we're putting the web apps together, and we care a lot about the second one, high fidelity, and round tripping really ties into that. So when you think about how this actually happens, what we're actually doing is you go and you open up the web app and you decide to start editing in there. What's happening is you're actually editing on the server. You're not editing on the client. And that's really important because when you're editing on the server, you're not taking it and basically converting it into an HTML file that you're looking at on your screen and then resaving it back. And this enables a lot of the co-authoring things I'm going to show you the way that people can interact with each other, but it also ensures that you maintain the fidelity of it. If I'm editing on the server, I make my edits locally, and that pushes up to the server to make the change. I know that if I'm looking at it, if someone else is looking at it, if they're opening it in a rich app, I'm on a web app, someone else on a mobile device, everyone's going to see the exact same thing. If I'm editing it locally, say it's an HTML file, and then I'm uploading it, I'm going to lose fidelity in that, and that's going to manifest itself when you see things like if you're using non-web, say, fonts. Say, for instance, so this presentation is done in Sago. People familiar with the Sago font? Sago UI? Sorry, I love these hand-raising things. Helps me understand. So very few folks. So Microsoft made this font. It's a very new font, so even if you're running older versions of Windows products, unless you've installed the font, it's not there. And so if you have a font like Sago that's there, what happens if you open up in a web app to view it? Well, you can define it if you're using CSS. You can go and define what the font is, but they're not going to have it locally. So what actually gets displayed? To make sure that the fidelity comes through in exactly what you've built, exactly what people have made, to make sure that that's high quality, what actually happens is we take an image. And so it's actually a graphic that gets sent down. And it's a graphic that's then backed by the text. So as you make edits, it sends the edits back up to the server, and it updates the graphic. So you're actually seeing the full fidelity. You're seeing exactly what's meant to be seen, even if the things that you're editing or things that you're working on aren't actually on that machine. And so fonts is an easy one because everyone kind of groks that idea. But there's also a lot of other things that you think about in terms of maintaining the what's really clear about your document, all the things, if you're going just beyond a text document, how you make those things show up, what you do with your PowerPoints, you know, whether it be animations, transitions, fades, all that kind of stuff, and making sure that shows up well, that's really important to us. When we did this, we really wanted, our goal was a no-compromises solution. So we round-trip it up to the server. It's based upon the an open standard. We've open standard all the Office documents. We put them up there. Like I said, it's not a conversion. Really important that it's not converting, because what we find out is if you take a look, you take other productivity software and you try and open a document and then you save it back and you open another one, you lose fidelity each time. And it's like a generational loss, like copying videos, and it gets worse and worse and worse. And we wanted to make sure people got exactly what they had built when they wanted to go and show it to other people. If you wrote a document, you want people to access it, you want them to get everything that they expected, and they don't want surprises. So I talked a lot about the high fidelity one, so I'm not going to drill a lot on that. But we spent a lot of time making sure that was really one of our key targets. It had to be a great experience for people. When you go and you look at it, it had to look exactly like what you built originally. And the last one is simply familiar and trustworthy. I mean, when you think about what we do, there's the Fluent UI, sometimes called the Ribbon, or here called it the Ribbon UI, but that experience of when your users go and they want to access this, is the experience that they get when they're accessing through a web browser or through a mobile device, is that going to be a new experience where it's unfamiliar to them, where they have to call help desk, where they don't understand what they can do and can't do, where the things that they're used to doing aren't common for them, or is this something that's going to be really easy for them? Is it something that it's going to be just like the Office they're used to using? And so we spent a lot of time making sure that this looks and feels and gives them the experience just like the experience they have when they're using the full Office applications. And then the last one, how many people use IRM in their organization? People use rights management? So only a couple of you right now. With the cloud, it certainly gets a lot easier. Because if you're into the cloud infrastructure, then you don't need to stand up your own RMS server. The cloud does it for you. You can do it either way, but one of the things that the web apps do is they allow you to respect IRM policies. So you can put things into RMS document libraries in SharePoint. And if your data is in an RMS library, that means you'll respect it. You'll be able to open it. You'll be able to close it. You'll be able to interact with those documents based on the permissions that people have and the access that they should have. And so you can protect and control the data that's in your organization, especially as people are taking it out of your organization, because in most cases, when someone's working on a web app, they tend to be away from their normal computer. They tend to be on another machine. And so if that's critical data, whether it be, you know, sales data or internal server names and mappings, whatever it is that you have, if that's data that you want to protect, you can do it. And these web apps will enable you to do that while you're giving people the experience to access those documents. So, like I said, the first part of this talk, I want to talk about the user scenarios, what users can do, what their experiences are going to be like. The second part, I'll talk a little bit about the server, what the infrastructure is like, what you're going to do in terms of setting up, in terms of load balancing, how you set up and configure one of these. So I'll start with the user scenarios. So this is what we had in 2010. So for the roughly 30 of you before that had used this in 2010, this is kind of, it's for those of you who are developers, it's a little bit like an NTR architecture. But your data point was always SharePoint, because it was a SharePoint role. So you had your SharePoint server, and you had the web apps installed as part of SharePoint. So all your data was stored there, and that's how you accessed and interacted with it. For functionality, you got a familiar, you got the kind of familiar Office UI and experience that you were used to. We made sure that you had that high fidelity experience we've talked about, and we made sure that it was available anywhere as long as you could get in, usually through HTTPS, unless you blocked it. Of course, you had the ability to choose whether you exposed it externally or not. That's a network decision. But assuming that you allowed that, you had the anywhere access pieces to that. The endpoints that we targeted, not surprisingly, browsers, PCs and Macs, and phones. And when I say phones, I'm really talking about any phone that had a browser in it. So you're talking S40 devices, you're talking Windows Mobile, Windows Phone, anything that had a browser with it. And that was the targeted experiences that we dealt with in 2010. Now, when we thought about what we needed to do for 2013, scenarios have changed. People want to do more. And so how do we make sure that we deliver what people need for today's environment and the future environment, not just where we were previously? And so when we thought about data sources, we wanted to expand it beyond just SharePoint. And so we looked at what are the other data sources that you have? And we said, okay, people use Exchange. They put data on intranets, file shares, they use Link. How do we make sure that the experience you have in all of these is the same? So I'll talk to you a little bit later about what the experiences used to be in these, but what we wanted to do for 2013 is make sure that no matter which of these sources you're opening information from, you can get the same experience, your users get the same experience. Again, it's tying back to that concept of fidelity. It's also tying into the idea of simplifying your infrastructure, that you don't have different things giving people different experiences. People aren't calling up and asking, why is it when I open it in Link, you know, I don't get the appropriate transitions and animations that I see when I'm opening it in SharePoint or when I have it open in the full Office experience. So making sure that you get the same thing no matter which of the experiences that you're in. And I'll talk to you a little bit about how we did that. We actually have an open API and protocol that's available. So we use it the same way that you'd be able to use it if you have an internal line of business application. You could actually add your own data source in there, and we give you full access to do that. We'll talk a little bit later about how you would do that. From the functionality standpoint, we really added to what was there. We had great fidelity. We've continued to have great fidelity, and again, with the new features and things that we've done with the new Office. But what you see is we now have advanced authoring. And what I mean by advanced authoring, although I'll talk a little bit later about that, is really how do you author in a group? How is it that when you're working with other people, when it's not just you working on it, or you want to do some additional features with things, how if you want to comment or track changes, or two people want to edit the document at the same time, or three people want to edit the document, how do you actually make that happen? People have been through the process where you're editing a document, you have it in SharePoint, and you go to edit it, and it says, this document can't be edited, it's already checked out by someone. Had that experience? I've had that experience a lot. Not my favorite experience to have with SharePoint. And so how is it that we went and focused on the co-authoring scenarios? And this is one of the things we've done with co-authoring, is give you the ability to edit the same document at the same time, have people able to go in and do that. And you can do that with the web apps the same as you can do them with the rich apps. And you can even trade off. Some people can be editing in rich apps, while other people on web apps work fine. And that's the same piece of the works well with others. Finally, on devices, obviously the environment inside organizations has changed. Is anyone here not supporting tablets, slates, and smartphones in their organization at this point? Yeah. They're basically everywhere these days. These smartphones are in everyone's pocket. Indeed, they may actually be coming in with your employees, whether you've given them to them or not. Tablets are a little earlier on that curve, but growing very quickly. And we wanted to make sure that we could support both of those scenarios when we think about the web apps. And when you go in there with your browser, that you can really have a good experience on those devices when you're going in and accessing your documents. So with that, I want to jump over and actually show this to you. Give me a second. You'll forgive the rodeo picture. So this should look pretty familiar. This is a SharePoint library. We've set it up in our demo environment here. So this is just a regular SharePoint library. And I've got a bunch of documents in here. You can now in SharePoint, hopefully people know, you can go in here and you can literally just drag and drop a document. I have documents here already, so I don't need to do that. But adding documents to a SharePoint library is really easy. There's also some features in Outlook that allow you to drag in directly from there, but I'll save that for another session. But just want to show you, I'll open Word document here. We'll open up the Word web app, and you'll see what it looks like. And so for those of you that remember 2010, 2010 we gave you basically what was like a web layout. And so what I mean by that is you didn't have a page separation here. There were no margins or borders. You still got decent fidelity in it, but the kind of the Chrome around the document and some of the additional advanced features you didn't see. And so we've done a lot of work to make this look exactly like what you would see if you were opening up in Word itself. So I'll scroll through the document a little bit here. So we call it print layout. But it's kind of the WYSIWYG of what you see is what you get. And you can see with the layout here, you can do gradients, you know, colors, different size fonts, different fonts. You can, you know, block text things into things. All the things that you're used to doing in creating a rich Word document, you have happening here. And so you can read on, you know, scroll through a little of the document. I don't need to scroll through it all, but you can see that you get all the different things that you would expect to see, your headers, footers, tick boxes, images. It's all there. And so when you create a document and you put it up and you tell your users, hey, you can access this through the Office web apps and through the Word web app, they're going to be able to see exactly what they created when they were on premises or when they were actually using Word and uploading it to SharePoint. And of course, it's not only just looking at it, but I can go, if I choose to edit it, you get two options. If you've got Word installed, I happen to have it, you can always edit it in Word itself. You can get the full rich experience with Word. You also can choose to open it in the web app. So I'll open it up in the web app so you get a sense of that this is not just a viewer. I mean, viewers are great, and it's good to be able to read that, but we've put a lot of focus on giving people the ability not only to view the document, but actually interact with it. So you can see a number of different things here. One, you saw Garth pop up for a second there. It says that he and I were working on this document together. So I mentioned before there was that co-authoring, that more than one person could work on a document at a time. That was that. And you see that show up, pardon me, down here in the bottom corner. It says two people are editing. However many people have this document open, it'll say that. And I can click on it and see who are the people. So I'm one of those people. So I'm in the document in edit mode. So it has me. It also has Garth. And we can actually make changes simultaneously. Now, I talked before about the round tripping, about how making edits actually happens on the server and why that's important. Making those edits on the server means that if I make them, the other people accessing the document see it at the same time. Just as an aside, what that also means is, let's say you're using the rich apps you want to be access offline. You're on a plane, you're traveling, you're in a train. You can go and make edits offline. When you connect back up to the enterprise, it will sync that data back up through SharePoint, and it'll be available to all the users. But obviously, if you're offline, you can't be editing the document that other people are seeing. So you have two people, they're editing, information pops up, and you can see, I mean, things, the one that surprised me, we had so many people ask for, was word count. Actually, in the bottom corner here, people asked, we said, you know, is that really important? Is that really, you know, that really the feature you want us to go build? And time again, people, give us word count. So you have word count, you have track changes, you have comments. And so I think I saw a comment further up. I'll show you in the next one. But you can put comments that are in here. If I went in and I'll show you some of the editing features. So if I go in and if I type, you know, so, and I'll misspell a word. So it has spell check. So that's not the browser that's actually doing the spell checking there. That's actually the web app that's doing the spell checking. So when you're accessing, no matter which of the devices, you're going to get spell checking that shows up. And it shows up just the way you'd expect it to do, just the way you see it in the regular Office applications. So spell checking there, it's real-time spell checking. You don't have to go and finish typing and then click, hey, you know, check spelling. It'll go and grab it right away for you. You can obviously do all the stuff that you're used to in terms of fonts and coloring. Again, it's a very rich editing experience that you're able to do. So the question was, can you add words to a dictionary? So can you do a custom dictionary? So I'll just create this fake word here, and I'll right-click. And I can set the proofing language. But what I can't do is, if you ask about custom dictionaries are not synced through the web apps at this point. But the language one does come up because you can be opening or editing it, and I may be in a different country. And so, for instance, we were talking about the sign up here, and it's spelled with the Australian spelling. It was kind of surprising for those of us that came from the States. But you can set the language, and so that's helpful if you're working with folks that are in another geographic location. Even more helpful if you're dealing in something that's a completely different language, and you can make sure that the spell checking actually happens in the native language, say if you were writing in Mandarin because you were working on something that was being used in China. So you have the ability to do that, and has all the access to the power of what's happening on the back end, which is the server doing all the work on this. So you have the ability to go in, edit, and like I say, you know, insert. You can insert pictures if you want. The page layout things that I talked about before, again, you know, your ability to set margins and orientation and really give the impact of all that you want. You can even go in, you can see the spacing. If you want to do kerning, if you want to do paragraph spacing, you can do all those things, all the rich edit pieces. And it's not just being able to view those pieces, but actually being able to create those. So you can go in, create, edit, all that's available right here from within the web app. It's a very, very powerful tool. You also, of course, I won't bother saving, but you can save. When you click save, obviously it saves it back to the server. So, yes. So we'll go back and take a look at Excel here. So Excel, we have I'll move off the picture since that's not particularly enthralling. But you can see, again, a very rich experience that you're going to get within Excel. So here you can see there are charts, there are graphs. I'll scroll through a couple of these just to give you some example of this is all within the web app. So you have pie charts, and you can create lots of very rich data in this. You can sort groups if you want. So it's, again, you know, you get viewing, but you get viewing at a very powerful level. You can create all sorts of powerful, you know, tools if you want to go in and take a look at your data, trend lines, all the stuff you're used to. But it's all the stuff that you're used to when you think about using the full Excel experience versus going in and just saying, okay, well, I'm going to, you know, I need a web viewer. So all the things when you create it, it's going to be here. It's going to look the way you want. You do get the ability, let me pop into edit mode here. So again, all of them, you know, very consistent. You're going to have the ribbon at the top. You're going to be able to pop into editing. You can open it in the full program, or you can open it in the web experience that we have here. So if I open this up here, and let's say that I want to edit this. So if I want to create a random number, so if I want to use some of the functions, I can do that. It'll do random number generation. If I want to say, you know, I want a random number from 0 to 4, I'll do that, and it'll give it to me. If I want to say, well, that's great, but that's a really, there's lots of stuff with that, so I want to round that, I can say. So you have the ability to do the formula building that you're used to. And if you know, if you're used to selecting a certain number of cells, you know, dollar sign $A4 through, you can do all of those kinds of things. So all the things that you're used to within Excel, you can go in and do those. And this is all within the web app. This is not, you don't even have to open up the rich app to do these things. There are some things that the rich apps still do that the web apps don't. This one has a bunch of hyperlinking in it. Once you start getting a hyperlinking between pages, you start to get some of the stuff that's a little rarer. But really, when you think about the calculations and the viewing of the data that you want to do and the editing at a reasonably rich level, you can see that it's all available from within the application. And you can go in through this web app and, again, save. You can see here, two people editing again, that co-authoring, co-editing stuff that I talked about before. That's all built in. Pivot table. So the question is pivot tables. I don't actually have a demo of that to show. So a pivot table will show up. I'm not sure about creating a pivot table. We can, if you want to come up afterwards, we can create one pretty quick. I'll create a power pivot and then we'll drop it in and see. So, but people will be able to view them. So this is kind of the view of Excel, and I want to go back and now we'll pop into PowerPoint. So open up. So one of the things you notice, I mean, you get the full view here, but you notice that we had a transition happen there. So it faded in. And I'll step you through a couple of these so you can see some of the experiences that you get with the PowerPoint experience, that it really is a fairly rich experience. I don't know why when this was built, they built it with a very slow transition, but it goes in, you can see, and it's not just one transition that you can do or one animation that you can do. I've got a couple of these slides to show that, you know, whether it be fading things in, whether it be image manipulation, you can see here not only we're doing a fade, but we're doing a fade while we're actually manipulating the image width. All those things that you're used to doing in building a really powerful PowerPoint presentation are all doable and viewable in the web app. You can also see that we have comments. So if I pop that, we can open the comments bar and you can actually leave comments for things. Comments are available in all of the web apps. We see it here in PowerPoint. Could have shown it to you in Word, it's in Excel. And so not only do you have comments, but if I go into edit mode, so I clicked add comment, so it's going to drop me into edit mode for a second. I can add a comment, and it'll drop it in. And it does it in a way that people are pretty familiar. If you use social media, you're familiar with this kind of, you know, tree-style layout of leaving comments. But you can go and leave comments. It'll show you if you're in edit mode where those comments are. You'll notice you've got, you know, all the shapes that you want to leave. You can insert pictures if you want. So if I, let me insert a piece of clip art, and I'll say, see if we have something for surprise. And this is actually, when it's doing this, it's going out and it's pulling this off of either the internet, if you're doing an internet search, or in this case, it's pulling it off of the clip art library that comes with Office. But all of this, of course, is not happening on the local machine. It's happening on the web app server. So if I were on literally a dumb terminal with a browser, I'd get this. So if I like this very enthusiastic gentleman here, I can choose him. And what it'll do is it'll pull that picture down and it'll put it in there. And I have the ability to put him in the corner. Maybe if I want to stretch the image a little, I can. You can do all the editing things that you would expect to be able to do to be able to impact and have that full experience. So if I go back and if I put myself back in presentation mode, I'll talk about certificates later. But what you saw there was because I don't have a certificate that's installed on my local machine because it's a virtual environment that's not connected to a trusted root authority. So you can see that the presentation now has that in there. If I pop onto the next page, what you're seeing here is full screen video that's playing. This is actually an embedded video in PowerPoint. So you have a PowerPoint, has an embedded video stored on the server, and through the browser, again, that rich fidelity experience I was talking about, it actually is showing up. I'm in the browser, I'm streaming that, it's playing through, and that will happen on the browsers, you know, all the browsers I talked about, all the main browsers. That also means when you're on your mobile devices, you're gonna get that experience as well. If you're on a tablet, and I'll talk a little bit more about kind of what the back end is on that and which ones are supported and which ones aren't, that's going to show up as well. So you get access to all those different things. It's just playing the slideshow at this point. But you get the ability to do everything from pictures, video, like I said, really, really rich functionality. The last one that I want to show you here is, yes? So the question was, if you're working on a document, or in this case a PowerPoint, and you lose connectivity, what happens to it? Well, remember that we're making the edits on the server. So whatever you were doing is in the server at that point. And that's especially true for things that are doing auto-saving, like OneNote, for instance. So the changes will be made. In most cases, you're tracking changes. And so if something was wrong or you didn't like it, you or one of the other people that's editing can go and change that back. But if you drop off the network, there is no offline support. If you want to do offline support, that's what the full rich Office applications are for. So I want to show you that not only can you open documents that exist, but you can create a new document. So in this case, I'll just, since the one I haven't shown you yet is OneNote, I'll create a OneNote document. I could open one too. So I'll give it a name. We'll call this TechEd AU Yay. And so it will go and it will actually create the document. It creates it in the SharePoint library, so it's saved up to that SharePoint library, and now I have a new OneNote document. So I can go through here and all the same things that you're used to, all the same things I've shown you, the co-authoring, the rich font access. I mean, you can insert pictures or new tabs, hyperlinks, all the things that you would do with OneNote, you can do here. I just want to show you that not only do you have the ability to open ones that exist and edit things that exist, but I could go and I could create a new document. I did it with OneNote here. You could do it with Word. You could do it with PowerPoint. You could do it with Excel. All of them you get access to. All of them you can go do whatever editing makes sense for you. So one last thing that I want to show you, assuming it hasn't timed me out, is this here is Outlook.com. It is my actual Outlook.com mail address, so trusting all of you not to put me on spam email lists. But what you see here and what I want to show you is I emailed myself a bunch of these documents. So I'll open up the PowerPoint. So this is Outlook.com. It's the public Outlook.com. There's nothing special about this one. I sent the same documents over, so I'm not pulling from a SharePoint library. In this case, I attached them to an email that I just sent from my own email address. What you'll see is we have the same experience. That everything that you saw before, again, I talked about earlier on that we're creating the same set of experiences for people so that people can have one place to go, one set of experience that they have, that they always get the Outlook fidelity, always get the Outlook experience, all the things they're used to. All the same things are true here. And so I just wanted to show you that whether it's Outlook.com, whether it's connection with Facebook, whether it's within your on-site, whether it's Office 365, it's all the same Office web apps. close that. So that's the demo of what your users can do. So I talked about news sources. I didn't demo Exchange, but you'll get the same thing, just what you saw with Outlook.com. You can do the same thing within your corporate environment. So within your enterprise, if you go in and you connect Exchange to the web app server, that rather than using Stellant, we'll talk a little bit about that's what we used to have, that you can go in and if someone sent an attachment, you can open it and you can choose to either view it in line or open it in the web apps, or you can obviously choose to open it locally if you had a copy of Office and actually get the full Office experience. So we wanted to tie it into those other data sources where people get data. This is one of the ones we got requested most often is, you know, great that it's in SharePoint. People always send me things in email. How can I do this in email? I don't want to have to save the document out of email, send it to SharePoint, open it up in SharePoint. That wasn't a great workflow for a lot of folks. And so this is about making that workflow make a lot more sense for people. And so we put it right there into Exchange. I'll show you later when I talk about the server piece of this, how you do that integration, what it takes to make that happen. It's pretty simple. But I'll kind of take you through that experience so you understand it. Same thing with Link, that when people go in with Link and they're doing a presentation, that's the key scenario. Most people go in and they're doing a presentation, they want to share a document. And so they upload the document and give people access to that. And so people can see that and they can have that full experience with it. And then finally, some people just use SMB file shares. You know, they put things up on their intranet. They're not stored on a collaboration server. How many people still have SMB shares, file shares in their organization? I use it all the time. On my particular machine, I've got a file. I've got it on my machine. I haven't set up my SkyDrive Pro yet. It's just real easy for me to share out a directory, have it available. You can do that. You can make the web app server work with that. So even if someone in your organization doesn't have the latest version of Office installed yet or still being deployed, they can go in, their web experience, you can give them that full Office experience. The one thing that I will note here is, you'll notice at the bottom of the last bullet point, viewing only. When you access through these particular ways, it is a one way. You get the full rich viewing experience. You don't get the editing experience. There's the WAPI API. I'll talk a little bit more about that later. If you want to do that, if you want to tie into another data source, say your own line of business app, you can do that. You can make it one way or two way. Both are available. But these were written using one way access. So if you actually want to do editing like what I showed you, that's a little more of something that you're going to do when connected to SharePoint. If you wanted to do two-way, yeah, you can always use the accessible APIs, go in, make it, and write that yourself. But the current versions are viewing, and if you want to actually go in and edit, going through SharePoint is the way that's kind of built into the wiring that's already built in if you don't want to do additional coding. So I talked about the works well with others, again, some of the new experiences that we made available for folks with the 2013 version, tracking changes. Tracking changes is amazingly useful when you're working with more than one person on a revision of a document, when you're sending things back and forth. It's really helpful for understanding, say, what someone has changed. If you've got a 20-page document, you don't want to go read 20 pages. You want to know what are the two pages they actually changed. Just go see what those tracked changes are. Those in comments make it working together a lot easier for people. It just before people would send a document back and forth, this actually allows you to work together on things. The co-authoring piece, you saw me and Garth Fort were both working on the document at the same time, and you'll actually see if you're using it, and I wasn't having him make any edits, but if he's making edits, those edits will actually show up. If I save and reload, his changes show up. We can actually work on the document at the same time. The way that that actually works is it locks the section of the document. Remember I said all the editing's happening on the server, that round tripping I talked about? That what it does is it locks that section of the document. So if I'm editing a sentence or a paragraph, that part is locked for me to edit, and that's how we avoid things like merge conflicts. So you think, what happens when two people are writing the same thing at the same time? What you don't want is just a mess of people all typing the same thing. If me and someone else both see that a word was misspelled, we both don't go and change it, and then you end up with like the same letter changed twice, and it ends up worse. That we lock that section of the document. We leave the rest of the sections of the document open for them to make edits. So for instance, when I work with my colleagues, we're thinking about writing product specs. And I'm thinking about, okay, well, I'm focused on what are we going to do in terms of how do we do load balancing? And so I'm writing that part of the spec. And someone else is working on, well, gee, what does the user interface look like? We can both be working on the same document, same time. As we make changes, those changes will be loaded into the document. And it all happens seamlessly. When my boss goes in, wants to see, hey, where are we with the document? He can see all the changes, all the people that are involved in it, all at the same time, all in real time. And then the last part, the meetings part, the connection that I talked about with Link and giving that Link experience when people are having a Link meeting and they're sharing their information in there, making that a great experience and making sure that when you're sharing a presentation or if you're just sharing a document, that you go in and you have that experience that's scalable. You can share a desktop, which is what a lot of people do. How many people have a Link meeting? Share a desktop. I've done that a bunch. Challenge of that is that doesn't scale. Like, if you want to share a desktop, that works great if you're doing it with a few people. If you're giving a meeting with, say, 30 people or even more, a couple hundred, real hard to share your desktop with all those people. That's a lot of load on your server. It's a lot of impact on one particular device. This actually has you upload the document to the web app server, and the web app server is very efficient at making sure that everyone gets access to the data that they need to and gets the view that they want. So, the advanced authoring piece, this is not a full list of all the different pieces, but there was some question before about pivot tables and such that you can go in auto sums, merge cells, query tables, that basically we've built a lot more of the more advanced features that people tend to use in the products and making sure that those are available in the web apps, giving people a better experience. We want them to not only just be consumption tools, but also give you the ability to do some editing, some document creation to make that an experience that makes sense for your users and they can have a good time with. PowerPoint, I really love what we've done with that. I showed playing a video. You can also insert a video if you want. Transitions and animations, you saw it in the demo that I showed. But you can also, if you want to, you can go into the ribbon and you can actually add transitions, add and edit animations. So some fairly high-level advanced features for people that are really want to get the most out of the product. We provide that for them. Word, I showed you the editing pieces, and same thing with OneNote. No need to really kind of go over that again. Your ability to go in, your ability to co-edit and have a great experience on what it looks like is really the key feature of what we've focused on. So the access across devices, remember I talked before about in 2010, we focused on browsers and devices and a limited number of phones. So this is kind of the ecosystem as we think about it today. So we have phones, like I said, I think of phones as anything with a browser tends to be legacy devices, S40 devices, Symbian devices, some of the older Windows Mobile devices. Browsers, we support all the major browsers. So if it's a major browser, think of major browser as anything that has, you know, a reasonably measurable amount of market percentage. So what it really comes down to is what features they're supporting. But you're going to see Firefox, Safari, Chrome, IE, and I believe Opera does work as well, though we don't spend a lot of time working on that one. But all those are going to work for you, so you should be fine. And some of the other ones that are even built off of that, if you think of like, you know, IronPort or Maxthon, some of those are all really just WebKit browsers. The rendering engine behind them is WebKit, and you should have no problem with those, although our focus testing is on the ones that actually, that we see our users using. If you're having one and you're not, that's a major browser and you're not seeing that, please come talk to me. I'd love to know what it is. Because we've, all the ones that I've heard from all of our customers and all the market research and testing we've done says that we're touching all the right ones. So if you have an environment and you're using something and it's not working for you, I'd love to know what that is so we can think about it for the next version of the product as we do that iteration. PCs and Macs, tablets and slates, obviously the big new ones, tablets and slates and smartphones. Lots of tablets showing up, lots of smartphones showing up, and making sure that you get a great experience on those devices. So viewing works on all of those. So your ability to open documents, take a look at them, consume that information, that's going to work on all your devices, basically. When you think about editing, editing is a little more focused. So I showed it today in the browser. PC and Macs, obviously you've got the full rich experience there. Really no surprises around editing on that. Tablets and slates is the new piece there. That if you've got a tablet or a slate and you're going in, you're going to have a good editing experience on that. And so your ability to do the things that I showed you today will be available, say, if you're taking a Windows 8 tablet device. And then device optimized. And this is another one of the things we've done for smartphones and slates and tablets. This is really one of those things that's fairly specific. What we did basically, it's for those of you that are browser geeks, Trident and WebKit are the two rendering engines that we've targeted for this. What that translates to is Trident is the rendering engine in IE, IE 10 in specific. Well, it's been in IE for forever, but we focused a lot on making sure that IE 10 and IE 9 work great. And then WebKit, which is really what you see in Android devices, in iOS devices, BlackBerry's latest platform uses it. So basically, everything else tends to use one of those two. There's very few people that use other ones, and those tend to be, when I take a look at people within the device community that have created something else, in most cases what they've really done is they've taken something like WebKit and then they've modified it slightly. They've tweaked it to whatever their platform needs are. So you're going to optimize experience there. And when I say optimize experience, touch is fundamentally different. It is a shift in terms of how you write software and how people interact with software. There's no right click. People are used to things that need to be big enough for a finger to touch, not for a mouse to touch. You may not have a mouse input device. What happens when multiple contact points hit the device? And so we've done a lot of things that we do some kind of smarts on the back end. We take a look at the user agent string. We take a look at, you know, what the size of the screen is, what the orientation is, all these things that help tell us what kind of device it is. And then from telling what kind of device it is, we'll actually send down an optimized experience. So if you're on a tablet, you're going to get a tablet-optimized experience. You won't just get the full browser-based experience, and you'll get, like, you know, the top corner of the window, and then you'll have to scroll around to do things. We want to make sure people really got a nice experience, and so we went in and we optimized it. And you'll see, if you take your tablet device and you go and you go to Outlook.com, or you go to Office 365, or you stand up one of these Office web app servers, you're going to see that the experience you get is actually different. The options you get are different. They're made to work for that device, for that experience. So 2010, I said, you know, this is a SharePoint thing. It was part of SharePoint. If you wanted to use the web apps in 2010, it was, you rolled out SharePoint, you put it in there. And let's say that you maxed that out. Well, then you stood up another part of SharePoint, you put in your Office web apps, you did it in each place. I remember I talked about, we had the different ones. We had the Stellant in Exchange. If you were in Exchange 2007 or 2010, there was the, what did they call it? A web-ready document viewing. Web-ready document viewing was basically Stellant. It was a licensed technology, Microsoft had licensed, and it would give you a view of that. But obviously that was different than what we would show. You know, they had written their own engine. They viewed certain things didn't show up as well. And Link used actually PowerPoint 2007. So if you were using 2010, you went in there with the 2010, say, version of PowerPoint for your presentation, and you'd used some of the new features, and you looked at it in Link, it might not look the same way that you expected it to look, because it's actually using the rendering engine from 2007. So you might be using a feature it doesn't know how to do. And so what you had is this kind of compartmentalized view where you could take one document, you'd have a different experience in all these different places where you may be looking at it. And so we said, that's something that we've got to do a better job with. So in 2013, we split out the Office web app server. It's actually a separate server role now. It's not part of SharePoint. It's its own server, and I'll show you how that gets stood up in a second. But then that just connects in. So if I've got four SharePoint servers, it connects to each of them. And you set it up, and you tell the SharePoint server, this is the web app server. Go talk to it, and it will make that experience show up for people. Same thing's true with Exchange. If you've got Exchange in your environment, and you want to use the web app server, you tell it, hey, we've got this web app server. Here's the PowerShell command that you go and run. You go tell it that it's there, and it starts using that. And so your users are going to get that same experience. Same thing if you've got Link and with file shares. They open from URL. And I say open from URL, you can use that for file shares or intranets. That also is what you can use if you want to use it in your own line of business applications. If you've got your own applications that are internally, you can obviously use the WAPI API that I'll talk about, but if you want to make it real simple, you can just have a URL. Basically, you pass the URL, and then you pass what the, you know, as part of the URL in the query string, you pass whatever the location of the document is, and it will open it in the web app. So this is how that works. So you have a browser, and in that browser context, it's going to connect out to SharePoint. So it connects to SharePoint, and SharePoint is, what it's going to say is, it's going to pass a token. Because remember, we have to make sure that we make this secure for people. It has to be secure within your environment. So SharePoint is going to send back a context for us, and that's the host frame, and it's also going to share a token with us. We're going to use that to connect out to the Office web app server. Remember, it's a separate server now. And so you actually go to SharePoint. You click on SharePoint. By clicking on it, what you saw in the demo that I did earlier, what actually did is it created a host frame. In that host frame, then, it sends the token over. That goes out to the web app server. The web app server then uses that WAPI. That's the Web App Open Platform Interface. It's publicly documented. You can go and look it up on MSDN if you're a developer. And WAPI actually goes and connects to SharePoint and says, SharePoint, give me that document that they're asking for. Now remember, it has the token because the SharePoint server sent the token over. They gave it the access token. So it says, I have the rights to go see this. Here's the rights that I have, because as a user, they tried to connect to SharePoint. SharePoint says, I manage rights. This user has rights to access this, or this user doesn't have rights, in which case it wouldn't allow them to. It sends that around. SharePoint then sends back the document, and it comes up in the application frame. So that's the way that we make sure that we protect the security of the environment, that you don't have cross-site scripting attack capabilities against something like this. And this is how we set it up. If you were going to write your own, if you wanted to go and write your own application that goes in and uses the Office web apps, here's how you do the WAPI stuff. This is just very high level, obviously, but that's how you'd actually write it. You'd actually request what it is you want, or if it's on your own site, then whatever management service you're using, or your own internal data, your own internal data backend, and you just have it sent straight to the Office web app. If you're using WAAPI, remember that one gives you the ability to read and write. You can edit and send back. Depending on how you're storing that data, you have the full API set for that. If you're just using the URL-based that I mentioned before, URL-based is going to be read-only. So security considerations. Talked about IRM before. The way IRM works in SharePoint is IRM'd document libraries. IRM document libraries are a little different than IRM'd documents. So IRM document libraries, what they do is if you send an IRM document to a SharePoint library and that SharePoint library has rights to access IRM. If it doesn't have rights to access IRM, it's just going to store it like a file. It's not going to know what it is. But if you have, say, legal considerations or compliance considerations that you have within your organization, so you need to do things like searches, legal holds, and you're doing that for things like document libraries, what this does is it puts the IRM at the user gateway. So anyone trying to access the documents is going to have to go through an IRM gateway that's going to understand, hey, do you have rights to it? Are you allowed to edit? It's going to actually apply the IRM when it sends the document out from there. It leaves it off of the document in the library. It leaves it off of the document so you can do those, the system can do those legal searches and holds and access. So basically, users don't have access to it, but back-end services, for compliance reasons, do have access. Because it's an IRM document library, you will be able to access it with the Office web apps. Office web apps will go in and access that information. If it's just an IRM document and SharePoint is not set up to be an authentication point to go and decrypt and access the IRM documents, it will not be able to access it because it doesn't understand it. It understands how to talk to the gateway. So that's an important consideration when you think about how you set these up if you're protecting your organization with IRM. Authentication, obviously within your organization, you're probably going to be using NTLM because, remember, this is used in other places like Outlook.com. We're going to be using it, you know, up on Facebook. We're going to be using it in lots of different places. We need an authentication model that works everywhere. And so OAuth is implemented here, and you can use OAuth to pass credentials if you're using a different authentication model with your servers. And then finally, this is just good design. Always use SSL. I'll talk a little bit about what that means in terms of load on the server and how you can offload some of that. But you should just always be transmitting anything that goes across the internet, anything that's on public internet. Make it SSL. It's not very difficult to do, and you'll save yourself loads of headaches. So server side of the stuff. If you're going to stand up a server, if you're not going to be using something as part of Office 365 or another hosted service or one of the consumer-based services, you're going to be standing up a physical server or servers within your infrastructure. So setting it up, you're going to be the one managing it. Like I said, it's separate than SharePoint, so you will manage it separately than SharePoint. You're going to manage this just like another Windows server. It's going to be its own server, and you should think about it that way. Don't think of it as part of SharePoint the way we have traditionally had it, where it was just kind of a role and part of SharePoint. You'll manage it separately, and you need to think about how you'll manage that separately. And then the integration points that tie between the two, that's really what you're going to do, is how you integrate them with each other. So server considerations. Windows Server 2008, R2, should be pretty standard at this point. .NET 4.5. AD is going to be your authentication model for those. Load balancing. I'll talk a little bit more about this later, but you can set up load balancers on these. It's pretty scalable. You can put, you know, several thousand users on one server, but if you're a large enough organization, you are going to figure out that one server is not going to be enough for you. I mean, we're 90,000 people at Microsoft. I assure you we have more than one of these running. So you will load balance it. I'll talk about what layer load balancer you need for that and how you do that load balancing. But think about that. You can use System Center Operations Manager, SCOM, if you want to go in and do monitoring. Just monitor it. Again, you're going to treat it like any other server you have in your organization. It's going to be a dedicated server, and it's going to be dedicated to doing web apps the same way that you might have an IIS server dedicated or a SQL server. But it's going to be something that you want to monitor and manage just like any other server. Their license enforcement is done through SharePoint, so if for some reason you want to say who can have access to the web app server and who doesn't, if you don't want to make it a generic resource for the organization, if you actually want to limit it to certain groups or certain users, you can do that. That's actually done through SharePoint. So SharePoint manages that piece of it if you want to do it. For performance and scale, like I said, it scales pretty well. It does require a dedicated machine, but if you want to, you can virtualize that machine, so you can make it a VM and run it as part of a VM server farm if you do it that way. You can add servers to meet demand. You make it part of a farm. They scale pretty easily to just kind of copycat them out. All your servers must be domain joined. That kind of makes sense when you think about that. And every server is going to be identical. So if you have a server image that you're using, you can create one server image, and then if you need to roll out additional machines, you can go and drop in additional machines. I don't know if any of you are Exchange admins and have done edge server management, where you set up one edge server and then you basically mirror it to the others. You tell it to get all the same settings. You can do something very similar to what you were used to with that in this model. You also can reconfigure without having to take machines out of your farm. So if, for instance, you need to move things around or change them in some way, you can actually do that without, say, decommissioning the machine, pulling it out of the network, making the changes, and then rejoining it in. You can do it while it's a part of the farm. So setting this up, setting up new servers is always fun and easy, right? This actually is pretty painless, and we've done this. It's really fairly simple. You do the setup that I showed before. So basically, you stand up a standard Windows 2008 R2 or later server. You stand up that server. You go in, you run setup exe, and that basically you can script that. You can set it up so it installs quietly if you want, that you don't need to sit there and click through everything. But it'll go and it'll install all of this. At that point, all you have to do is run this PowerShell command. So you stand that up, and you say, you know, new Office web app farm. You give it the URLs. And literally, at that point, your Office web app server is up and running. I mentioned before SSL. You're going to want to SSL protect things. You can go in with PowerShell, and you can see the whole help documentation. There's a few other command things, but you would do dash certificate, and give the certificate name, and we go. And that would allow you to do the SSL protection on it. I strongly encourage all of you to do it, unless you're doing it in a sandboxed environment. Again, just get in the habit, SSL for everything. But really, one PowerShell command, you can make that a PS1 if you want to script that. If you need an application, you could write it. I mean, it's really simple to stand that up. So if you max that out, you're doing a high availability scenario. How is it that you add more of them? Again, you do the same thing. Stand up a server, run setup, and then you basically, you tell it, hey, we've already set this up as a web app server. I don't need to set the internal external URL. I already did that. Remember, they're part of farm. They're going to be load balanced. So in this case, all I tell it is what machine to join. So if I've got an existing machine, say, join that machine. And when it joins that machine, it'll pull over all the same configuration pieces that it needs. It joins the farm. You're done. And it really is. I mean, it's literally as fast as it takes you to stand up a server, whatever your particular environment is like for standing up servers. Once you've stood up the server, making it a web app server is really very, very quick. So load balancing. I talked about load balancing. And again, if you're setting up a farm of these things, it's one of the things you want to think about. How do you make sure that the server doesn't get overwhelmed, that your users can have access where they need it, when they need it? If you're geographically diverse, that you've got people in multiple locations, you want to make sure that you set up your DNS and you route people to the appropriate ones to avoid latency challenges that you might have. One thing, SSL offloading. So I talked a lot about SSL. You need to make the decision about security, about where you need SSL protection, where you don't. Certain security products will want to sit in a stream that obviously sitting in an SSL doesn't do a lot of good because it can't analyze the stream of information. Some people use it for data tracking, what data is going in and out of an organization, who's looking at what, all those considerations. You can use offloading. So if you do SSL offloading, you basically stop the SSL at your load balancer. And at your load balancer, the SSL stops and then it comes into your organization. And when it's inside your organization, it's unencrypted. So you need to think about that. That's keeping it safe when it's on the internet. You need to decide whether on your intranet you want to have that data communicating between those servers, encrypted or unencrypted. You know, do you trust the people that have access to that leg of the network? How isolated is that leg of the network? Who can put on a network sniffer and who can't? You need to decide those things. So take a look at it and make sure what's right for your organization. But certainly SSL puts a fair amount of load on the server. It's encrypting every connection that goes through it and has to maintain and do that calculation. And so we support SSL offloading, and you can go and do that if you want to be able to scale this kind of farther, higher, faster. Server affinity kind of goes without question. And this is a layer 7 load balancer. So you can use NLB, network load balancer, if you want. You don't need a big IP. You don't need a really big, expensive load balancer to do this. You can do it with the built-in load balancing services if you want. So connecting them to SharePoint. So I did most of my demoing today in SharePoint. I showed you kind of what happens with the pieces in SharePoint. Excuse me. What actually happens? So I showed you how to stand up a web app server. What I didn't do there is I didn't connect it into SharePoint. So SharePoint wasn't aware. All I did is set up the server. At that point, what you're enabled to do is you can use the URL method, that you'll have a URL because you set what the URL is, and you can pass it a query string of what the document is, and you can view documents in it. That's what happens on that PowerShell that I showed you a couple slides ago. So in this case, what does it take to actually connect that into SharePoint so you can have the kind of experience that I showed you? So you're going to connect in. You're basically going to tell the SharePoint server, hey, there's this web app server. And you're going to do the inverse, which is telling the web app server what is there. What does that actually entail? PowerShell. Again, one PowerShell script, really simple to do this stuff. And basically you just tell it, hey, there's a new SharePoint WAPI binding. This is what you want to connect to, and you need to tell it what the server name is. Once you've done that, you're done. Like, it really is fairly simple. SharePoint 2013 is written to understand what these servers are, what they do, how to interact with them. And so you've got that. It will normally just store the documents there. When you do this setup, SharePoint will know, okay, I've got a web app server. I've got something that I can interact with here. And when it's got that, then all the things that you saw today, all the things that I demoed, just automatically light up. They automatically show up. Now, obviously, it's not going to be SharePoint WAPI binding. It's going to be things like Exchange WAPI binding or Link WAPI binding. But doing this equivalent things for Exchange and for Link, you'll do the same things as you want to take that server and stand it up for each of them. Yes? So the question was, will this work with previous versions of SharePoint, such as SharePoint 2010, or is it SharePoint 2013 only? The answer is it's SharePoint 2013 only, because SharePoint 2010 doesn't know what WAPI is. It wasn't written for it. So if you have 2013, it will automatically light up. If you have 2010, you won't. If you're doing SharePoint integration work, say for instance, you could always write it. That's why WAPI is publicly documented, that you could always go and write that piece if you wanted to. There's nothing that stops you from doing it, but it won't automatically understand it. That's the 2013 piece. So you can remove it just as easily. I mean, like most things in SharePoint, with PowerShell, rather than doing new, you'll do delete dash. I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. You can look at the help, pull that up, or if you have any questions, come talk to me. So load balancing. So load balancing is pretty simple. We recommend that you just, unless you have a security need to put your different experiences on different boxes, just make all of your Office web app servers the same box. Just mirror the box and do that. It's going to be simple. And then you just point your load balancer, and it's just like all the typical load balancing stuff you do. Let the load balancer talk to each server, figure out which one it should be sending things to, whether you're doing round robin or whether you're using something a little more sophisticated to see what the utilization of each box is. Pull it down, set it up, let them talk to each other, and they're going to make that decision. Now, there are cases where you may want to isolate those things. So for some reason, if you wanted to, say, do it by server role, if you wanted to say, hey, this is going to be my Word web server, this one's going to be my Excel server, you can break those out. You have the ability to do it. Unless you have a security need within your organization, unless you're trying to compartmentalize for some reason, there's no real good reason that I know of to do it. There's no, in terms of scale benefits that you get, it's better to just have one generic box and go and put that box down and let people access, as those scale out, just scale out your load balancer. As you have multiple sites, go and put them at multiple sites. But no real reason to break it out unless you have a specific security consideration for it. I wouldn't recommend, like for those of you who've done integration of other servers like Link or Exchange, where we had different server roles and you actually deployed different roles in different environments, no need to do that here. This one, I love the guy that made this slide. I pointed out to him that no one should put Exchange in a perimeter network. But the Exchange edge role does actually go there. So I edited this slide slightly because they put it there. I was like, no, don't do that. But basically, this is showing you the two examples of how it goes through. Remember that with SharePoint, everything goes into the corporate network, and then it speaks directly to it. Because Exchange is slightly different, people will come actually into the Exchange server. They usually come in on a separate port because mail is slightly different. And you'll get that access there. You'll have it on the edge, which is actually only there for inbound traffic in most cases. And then there would actually be Exchange Edge would connect to a full Exchange server that you would see within the corporate network. But the idea here, again, that it's a separate server. It serves all of these needs for accessing those documents, editing them, documents, viewing them. All that's going to be there separately. You just need to tell all the servers that you want to integrate this data with. You want to point it there. So I did want to show one quick other thing that I forgot to show in the demo, which was just one of the things that if you go and you go to the dots here, these like three little dots, you tap on it, you do get a preview. And I forgot to mention that. So we talked about when you integrate with SharePoint, you get a preview there, and this is actually an interactive preview. You can actually move through them. So I did want to show those pieces. With that, please fill out your evaluations. I do take them seriously. It's how I become a better speaker. It's how I bring you better information. So please take the time. I do take the feedback seriously and appreciate when you do that. If the good karma isn't enough for you, there's also a giveaway for a mouse that you can win. But filling that out, there's more information up on Channel 9, the TechEd information. And for the Exchange and Office stuff, if you go down to the show floor, you may have seen the giant chair there with the flight simulator. We're giving that away. You can enter to win. Someone at TechEd will actually take that home. We're not bringing it back to the States with us. But with that, I'll take any questions if people want to come up afterwards. But otherwise, enjoy your lunch, and thank you very much for your time today.